Very good. Thank you for all being here this evening. It's a joy to see you and recognize that you're going to make this an exceedingly fun experience tonight. Tomorrow, it'll be a different type of story, but tonight we're going to do this type of story. All of you were given the old hurrah here from Pamela Wenger, Reverend Pamela Wenger, the lady who sees through your hearts, into your life, into your being, and recognizes what she is herself in you. And that's why she loves you all so much, because she sees what she is in you, like your song tells us. How can she do this? The first thing that Reverend Pamela Wangler learned was that there is no place on earth where God is not. And our friend the veterinarian was asking the question about a stone that separates. Does it have two entities operating in the stone? And I say, there is only one in this universe. There is only one. The allness and the one in this universe. We may have a material form in which we separate ourselves from the oneness, but we are merely expressing that degree of the oneness that we are understanding at that moment. And as a stone is split in two, you say, well, it has two entities in it. It's always the one single entity. But you see, the stone that he's talking about is not necessarily an exact 50% split. You know what I mean? One part of the stone is a little bigger than the other part. You know, like when your brother or your sister used to cut the cake. And she always wanted to take the last piece, you know, which was the bigger piece. But the two stones that separated, each stone was expressing itself in the dimension and in the degree to which it sees itself. Now, you know that a stone that is small was used by David, wasn't it? David, as he found that wonderful man standing out there saying, I am superior to the king's army. And everyone ran in fear, but David came forth and he said, great king, what was the king's name? The king is Saul, yes, yes. And Goliath was the evil one. That is, he's in the other side, you know. His people didn't think he was evil at all. And he took the little stone that he was used to putting in his slingshot, and he threw the stone because he did it for his king. He did it to protect his king. He didn't do it because he wanted to say how good he was. He was just protecting his king, and the stone went boink, right to the forehead and knocked Goliath out totally. Put him down. You see, the little stone has a purpose that we oftentimes don't recognize. The big stone has a purpose too. Now, what could a big stone be used for? And what were we told about that? It oftentimes is the cornerstone, which holds up the building at the last moment. Because the whole building waits to have the cornerstone put in. Of course, we do it differently nowadays. We put it on the corner. But it usually was the archstone. It was the cornerstone, the archstone, that was that which held up the doorway, which held up the window, which held up all things that maintained the building. Now these stones, you say, well, they don't have a name like Herb Byerly, you know. They don't have a name like Pam or George or Wallace or Martha or something. They just have beingness. Now, you've looked at stones on the desert, haven't you? You've read about them in the National Geographic, how they walk along. Now, why is it that some stones walk along this way and some stones walk along that way? They all don't walk the same way. They walk in diverse paths, even on the desert. Now, why is this? You see, there is one universal mind, one universal consciousness, one universal is, one universal allness, and that's God. We can call it absolute, we can call it by many different names, and each name is equally good. But the thing is, this universal beingness can never be separated. It can never be in any way deleted or changed in anything. In you is the allness that God is. But you are expressing what you feel you understand of God, and I am expressing what I feel I understand is God. And the day that I take the time, Pam, I've been getting after Pam about this, she enjoys a little bit of TV now and then, I say, Pam, get busy and start meditating and meditate and find out who you are. Now, I have a little booklet out here, it's the 3-hour meditation. It's a very wonderful meditative technique, and I'll explain it more later if you wish, but at the moment I want to just say, if you want, tonight, you could have the illuminating experience of knowing your absolute divinity if you wish. But I don't believe you wish. Because if you choose to, no matter how wise you are or how experienced you are, you will turn off the TV set. You will turn off your husband or wife or children or dogs or cats or goldfish. You'll put them all aside. And you will take the time for yourself because you're worth it. You're worth it. And you will explore the divinity within you. David asked me, Herb, which book would you recommend? What's your favorite? And David, what did I say to you?
Silently pointed to my heart.
I said, the book within you is your favorite, is my favorite. That's the book I recommend to all of us. Now, I will digress for a second here, but I'm not really digressing. Many of you have had the luxury of being a parent. And you have been one of the most idiotic parents on the face of the earth. You said you don't know how to do it. You said you don't know how to answer their questions. Mama, why? Mama, why? Mama, why? You know, put the kid off my back, you know. Well, you chose to have the child, and so you chose to have the child asking you these questions, and you know the answers to these questions. And the answers are never put off to tomorrow. When a child asks you a question, however grand and glorious and sexual it may be, you answer it. And the child will take from your answer what he perceives and understands. But you see, you don't know this. You don't know this. Because you have not taken the time to go within yourself and look for your own manual of operation of how to be a human being, of how to be a parent, of how to be anything. Because there is only one source of knowledge in the entire world, and that's within you and within me. But we haven't taken the time in introspection to go in and listen to the book that speaks within us. Some of you may have had the privilege of reading The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. They're an excellent set of books. And whether we believe it or not is unimportant, but what it does, it inspires us to think. And in there, they had a set of books that were called the Akashic Records, and they were a set of books that were a singing set of books that were printed on tablets. And when they were opened, it began singing the songs of whatever it was that the story they had to tell. That's in you and me. That's that book in us. If we would just take the time to listen within ourselves, we would hear that singing. That's what you heard. You're listening to that. You look in the mirror. and you see yourself. You see God, and God sees you. And you could not see God unless you were God. Because every time you look in the mirror, you see God in you. And that's beautiful. And every time we look in the mirror, we see God in us. Now, are you willing to take the time to listen here, not the TV, you know? Take the time to listen here, not to what your husband or wife or children say, or the world or the news commentators say. My goodness sakes, how's the Pope doing, by the way? He's whole and perfect. I don't care what anybody says about him, he's whole and perfect. I don't know him to be anything but whole and perfect. In my life, in my world, he's whole and perfect. Why are you so excited about this? I'm not. I'm just telling you the truth. He's whole and perfect. Now, do you want to see him any other way? You don't like Catholicism or something like that? You got that a bug in your mind about that? Hey, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. He's a man. He's a human being. He's an expression of God. He's not only an expression of God, he is God. Now, you look at the Pope. Do you see him whole and perfect? Yes. Why? Because you look in the mirror. You look in the mirror. And when you look in the mirror at Pam, what do you see? You see this fabulous woman who is just glowing energy and power and magic. And standing by her side, she has that magical being called Richard, you know. And what does Richard do?
What Pamela says.
Oh. You blew it, baby. You blew it. Richard does exactly what he wants to do, and what he wants to do is to work with Pam to bring out this wonderful church and develop this wonderful church. And Richard is a far greater man than any of you will ever know. I recommend that if you can get Richard to teach a class on knowing your spiritual self, he will be a master at it. Now, don't you shake your head up and down as though you know it all. She does, though. But you see, we should stop thinking that just because, well, Richard was pointing out a man and a woman who were walking through the restaurant, and the woman had a limp from some illness, and her husband was walking behind her sympathetically with a limp, too, which is sometimes what we do, you know. Now, wouldn't you think that her husband would walk beside her with strength and dignity because he sees her with strength and dignity? Take my arm, princess, and let us walk together. You know? That's all it takes. Now, you are the one who is letting someone take your arm because you are believing in yourself. We have a student, lovely lady. She came to us recently, about 3 or 4 years ago, and she had been following many teachers and many gurus of types, and she had listened and learned well. And then she was living with one guru that she had, and this guru was 92, well, he's in his 90s, and he's a great guy, but he was on his last legs by his choice. And so they were living in this house in San Diego, and the woman went out to buy some groceries and came back, and the house was on fire. And she ran in there and she grabbed her teacher and brought him out, but he died of burns. And she had burns over a major part of her body. And she was in her 80s. And they restitched her. They recovered her. And today, she's 88. Fabulous. You wouldn't know she'd ever been in the fire. But anyhow, she came to us. She read an article about us in the paper. And the article was saying that we had the monastery up on top of the mountain and so forth, and that we were teaching, I am God, God I am, and how, you know, how terrible that is. And so she said, I want to see your place. I said, well, fine, come up. She says, I'm 88 and I'd like someone to drive me. Oh, we'll come down and get you, what the heck, you know. So we brought her up next time we were in town, and she visited us. And she says, oh, this is what I have always believed. This is what I always want. This is my philosophy. And we said, well, thank you. She says, I have a church. It's a organized corporate church, tax exempt and all that sort of stuff. And I'm not using it. Would you like it? Well, sure. So we took the church. And she says, well, now, here, you got to take the checkbook that goes with it. And I said, fine. A couple thousand dollars maybe. And so she gave us a checkbook. $257,000, you know, to God. That's really nice. But you see, we didn't ask for anything. We didn't want anything. So then she became a student. Your course is paid for. She became a student, and she's doing beautifully. And every single time I go in town to visit her, and I don't really like to go to visit her, but every time I go to visit her, she says, just a minute. And she goes into the back room, and she says, I've got all this stuff here that I don't need. And she brings out $300-$400 and throws it in my hand, you know, and says, take this, put it in the church. And she's doing this every time. And I feel guilty going into her house. You know, I say, I just want to be nice to you. And so then we bought her a computer, because she said she wanted to listen to my talks on the web. And every day I give 3 talks on the web, and then we have our seminars all on the web available to you to pull off at no charge, you know. And so she wanted to hear them. So we got her this little insignificant computer for $1,200 or something like that, you know. Really nice little portable, but what she wanted. And she couldn't use it. So we had to go down, teach her, and she had other people teaching her. And finally she caught on. Now she can do it herself. And she's on the internet, she's on the homepage, she's on the emails, she's doing everything. But you see, every day she's contacting us and she's saying, hey, when you tell me stop everything and listen within, I turn off the computer and I stop it and I listen within. And I say, Dorothea, you are super young. And that's another thing. Again, a digression. She's a lovely lady. And she would go around to all of the shut-ins, the elderly, in her little red Jeep. And she would go from the local bakery using their day-old sweet rolls and taking it to all these elderly shut-ins. And she's always teaching, you know, good diet and eating proper things and doing proper. And I said, why are you taking this sugar stuff to these elderly? You know, you give them a high. What are you doing that for? She says, hey, they're closing off their life now. They might as well have all the joy that they can get. And she says, and then when I go to see them, they ask me questions. They say, how can we be 89 years older like you are and dashing around so full of energy? And I said, don't ever tell them about your fire experience. Because then they'll look at you and see you as a fire experienced person and see you limited. Have them always look at you and say, wow, you're great. You were this way all your life, weren't you? And the truth is, she was. And that she had this experience which made her less than perfect for a moment was only for a moment. Only for a moment. You see, when you're dynamic, you're untouched by life's experiences. That doesn't mean you don't have them. She had never been ordained as a minister, and she gave us this church. So we ordained her as a minister in her church. You know? And we took it to La Jolla, and we had a wonderful dinner together, and then she said, we must go over to this chocolate place. And so we went to this chocolate place, and we bought some chocolate. It was chocolate that was made by some guys down in South America. And then after that, we had to go and get coffee at Starbucks, you know, which was right around the corner. So we went over there, and as she stepped down the stair was unexpected, and she tripped. and she went shakach, you know, and banged her head on the concrete, and her glasses went flying, and you know, and everything, and a bunch of motorcyclists there with their leather jackets on came running over. Lady, can we help you? You know, and they were all really very nice, and everybody came out to help. And she was, I'm all right, you know. And she sat down in the chair. I'm all right. They gave her a glass of water. I'm all right. And then as we walked away to the car later, she was limping a little bit. And I said, Dorothea, we've got to take you to the emergency to have them look at you. And if you're okay, that's fine. But if not, you know, we want that taken care of. We don't want anything out of order. And so we went there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, they got around to seeing her. And so I was with her all the time. And she says, Dr. Pardee, I could never begin to pay you for all the time you're spending with me now. All these hours that we're talking on philosophy, we're talking on ideals, we're talking on living. You know, we were. And we were doing great things. But you see, we're putting the cause in motion. The doctor said, now, your knee is a little swollen. There's no bones broken or any problem. We can withdraw the fluid off your knee and it'll heal fast. Or we can leave the fluid there and it'll just dissipate by itself and return to normal in a little longer time. She says, take it off. So they stuck this big needle into her leg, you know, like that, you know, and drew off the fluid and keep drawing it off and drawing it off. And she's sitting there breathing deeply. But I said, Dorothea, are you okay? As long as you're here with me, I'm okay. I'm just fine, she says. And so they finished. And then they said, okay, now, how does it go? And so she was wiggling it. They said, now, get up. Test it, you know. She tested it. Now, you can't leave the hospital unless you have either a wheelchair or a stroller or crutches or this or that. She said, I'll take them all. And so she took them all, and we went home. I said, Dorothea, you can't go to your house tonight. You live on the second floor. We can't have you climbing up and down the stairs without having someone around to attend for you. So we took her to the ranch, and she stayed with us for 5 weeks. She didn't need it. But she was having a ball. She took our golf carts and drove them all over the place. We have 104 acres up on top of the mountain. And we have an indoor swimming pool and indoor jacuzzi and paths and other good things and meditation centers. And we're just, you know, really geared for having a very meditative time. But when she left us, she was absolutely perfect. Absolutely. And she was a dedicated student of our philosophy. Dedicated. She put the cause in motion. And I said, Dorothea, let me again back. Dodi, that was the name that she was going by, Dodi. I said, Dodi, where did the name Dodi come from? She says, oh, that's just a love name that people give me. And I said, Ellen is my associate, and she speaks Swiss and Switzerdeutsch and German and French and Italian and everything else under the sun. I said, Ellen, speak her name as it should be spoken in German. So she goes, Dorothea. You know, she does much better than I. But all the beauty and the romance and the word came out, my goodness sakes, what a wonderful name. And I am calling myself Dodi, you know. And so I said, you know, we had a seminar in Switzerland, in Lux. And we had about 30, 40 people there. And there was one young man whose name was Patrick. But his father called him Bobby, and the family called him Bobby all his life. He didn't even think that his name was Patrick, because he was always called Bobby, even in school. And so we were teaching the value of a name. And we were teaching why it's so important that you live according to your name, not karma, not reincarnation, not all that stuff. We're going to get into that in a minute. Not that stuff, but because that's the name you chose before you were born. You chose Patrick Urs Stalder as your name before you were born. Patrick, meaning saint, Urs, meaning a bear, Stalder, whatever. You know? So you chose that before you were born. And if you don't live your name and put the grace, the charm, the beauty, the honor that your name is in motion, you will not have fulfilled part of what you had chosen as your purpose for being here. Now, we'll digress again. We say reincarnation. How many of you are aficionados of science? Yeah, we all are. How many of you know what science is finding for itself this moment today? They say all time is
now.
All space is here. All time is now, all space is here, all time is now, all space is here, all time is now, all space is here, all time is now, all space is here. Therefore, there is no place for you to have reincarnated from. Now, what I do say is, you are living on an infinite number of dimensions right at this moment. You are living in a zillion billion bodies, a zillion million minds, a zillion million, if you will, places, even though they're all right here. As Ernest Holmes taught in The Science of Mind, there are bodies within bodies within bodies, and Jesus taught that too. There are bodies within bodies within, Reverend Pamela is so proud to tell me that she sees the ectoplasm of people, or the spirit bodies of other people. Well, God, it's about time. It's about time that she begins to recognize all these other bodies that are all around her. But she tries to say that there's something outside of herself. Now, how many of you read Ramtha? Whatever the name of the book is. Ramtha is a book a woman wrote about this man who spoke through her, okay? Well, now, there was no man to speak through this woman. She was writing that about what she wrote. That was her own inner awareness. Now, the moment that woman begins to say, I am intuitive, I am listening to the divine within me, and this is another aspect of my being, another dimension of time and space. This is who I really am in another area. Not that I'm not who I am right now, but who I am in another area, you see. So all of these things that we're talking about, all of these things that have the spiritualist type of concept to them, that separate us in time and space, do us a disservice. All time is now, all space is here. So all the experiences that we ever have go through our mind are real. They are real. But they are happening on another dimension, and we are merely privy. We are merely given the privilege of being aware of what is going on in another dimension. What do you think when you're dreaming? Oh, that's just things that I'm thinking about during the day. Nonsense. Those are things that you're doing on other dimensions. And you don't have the courage to stand up for it. Because you think that you'll be Virginia, you know, all these entities within her. Now, wasn't she an alert girl? Except that she forgot who she really was. When you're living on this dimension, you're living in this dimension. You may be aware of what goes on in other dimensions, but that doesn't mean that you should be living them. You should be living well what you're doing here. That's why I say to you, learn to introspect. Learn to read the Bible within you. The book that tells you how to raise your children. The book that tells you how to be the divine master that you are. Start studying this. Start learning this. Start listening to this. It's right here, right here. And it's not hard to find. But you're so lazy. You are so irreverent that when God knocks from your inner door, you don't even open it and say, yes, God, come on out. Come on out. I know you're in me. I know you're there. I just haven't paid attention to you recently. What do you like, God? Cream in your coffee? Tea? Some sugar, maybe? Hey, I know you're smiling in joy, but that's the way you talk to God. Because God is you. You talk to God just the way you are. Because God is no different than who you are right now. Now, unfortunately, we're expressing only that degree of God that we have chosen to be aware of. That doesn't mean that we have to continue doing that. I have a golden retriever, a mini pin, mini schnauzer, three cats, and 104 acres up in the mountains, and I walk every morning about 4 miles, 3 miles around the acres at 4 o'clock, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And on the path are stones, and I will say to my feet, just walk right around them. I can't see them. It's pitch black. I can see them, really, but I can't. I don't look for them. I don't look down. I look out. And I walk right over these stones, and they're not even there. And my associate, she walks later in the day, about 6 o'clock in the morning. She sleeps a lot, you know. And as she's walking along, she says, "Herb, I see Rex's footprints, but I don't see yours. Where are your footprints walking through the mud, you know? I know he's on the leash and you're right with him there. Where are your footprints?" And I said, "Good question. Now, where are they?" You see, you do a lot of, as you might want to call them, miracles, but you don't even know it. Have you read Kinship with All Life by J. Allen Boone? Read Kinship with All Life by J. Allen Boone. It's one of our required reading books for the University of Healing, but for you. In Kinship with All Life, J. Allen Boone is, he took care of, what's the dog's name? A dog name. He took care of this dog. And this dog was a movie star. And he had worked for the Humane Society in Los Angeles, and part of the choice he was given was to watch over this dog while in between movies, because he was a very famous dog. And so he would talk to the dog. And he asked the dog one day, he says, "Why are you always," and the dog slept on the same bed he did, you know, "why are you always turning with your butt facing toward my face, you know?" And the dog said, you know, point to the window. He says, "I've got to keep my eye on that French windows down there, because that's why I'm here. So now, if you bring your head up to this end of the bed, then we'll both be out there doing it." Now, the dog talks to him. And he went into his kitchen, and this was the days of the ice box, remember that? And so he was seeing these ants invading his ice box. And so he thought to himself, "Now look, I can take the broom and slaughter a lot of you. I can do this, I can do that." He says, "But we're intelligent beings now. Who's the head here? Who's the head ant here?" So he got down on all fours and sat on the floor and he said, "Who's the head ant here?" And they all stopped, looking at him in surprise. And he spoke to them. He said, "Now, I can slaughter you. I can put you all away. I can do all sorts of things. But," he says, "that's not necessary for you or for me." He said, "Why don't you just leave my refrigerator alone, and I will not slaughter any of you. Now, I'm going to go to the show. And I'm going to be back in a couple hours. And when I come back, you just all be gone, and we'll both be happy." Well, they were all gone. Now, how did he do that? He was sitting on his desk, at his desk. I'm learning more and more German, auf der Stuhl, you know, and auf der Tisch, and so forth. So he's sitting at his desk, and a fly came tiddling along and talking to him. And he would put his hand out, and the fly would jump on his hand. He'd say, "Well, you are a courageous fellow." And then the fly would go back on the desk, and the fly would be here. And this went on for a week. And he called the fly Freddy. And he said, "Freddy, you know, you live a very precarious life. I wouldn't want to do anything to hurt you at any time, but I would appreciate it if you would, you know, just be very careful. And also, I have a cat who likes to catch flies, and so I don't want you to get into trouble." Well, he talked to the fly, and the thigh was always just above where the cat was, or just above where he might be hurt. He went into the jungles of Africa, I think it was, and he was studying the animals there, because he loved them so. And as he was studying the animals, he said to himself, why is it that this place is empty of monkeys? I heard that there are always a lot of monkeys here. So he went in there, and he sat down in the corner of this big open area, which was all surrounded by jungle, and he waited quietly, as he could do. And after about 3 or 4 hours, patient man, the monkeys all started coming in, and they filled up the whole place. They were chitter-chattering among themselves, and then all of a sudden, a strange monkey came in and chattered something, and they all disappeared. And then he sat quietly for another 2 hours, and then he saw some hunters coming into the area. They were hunting those monkeys. And the monkeys had warned the other monkeys that they were coming. And so then, after these hunters left, he stayed. They went about their business searching. The monkeys came back. Now you see, can we talk to animals? Oh my, can we talk to animals? Can we share with them? Yes, we can. Now, remember this, and you'll speak beautifully to your pet, your goldfish, your chickens, your ducks, your cats and dogs, and wives and husbands and children. They are thinking exactly the same thing you are thinking. If you are unconditionally loving, they will be unconditionally loving with you. If you love Freddy the Fly, he will be just as tender and innocent and caring with you as you are. If you love your dog, he will be just as loving with you. I've only had Rex for a short time, just about a year now, a year and 1 month. He was 6 weeks old when I got him. And Rex is by my side constantly. He always wants to be with me. He always wants to do things with me. Except for one little thing. He doesn't want to come. When I say, come Rex, when he's doing something he shouldn't, he looks up at me, he says, oh, time to play. Come means play. And I must either teach him a different word or put different meaning on that word. And I'm working with him on the leash every day, and I let the leash go out 20 feet there, and then I say, Rex, come. And he comes. And then occasionally he gets tired after I do it 10 or 15 times. I want him to be tired. And he starts looking around for something more interesting to do. And I say, Rex, come. When I call you, you come. And then when I'm done doing this, I'll give him a treat. And when I give him a treat and we walk together, he doesn't have to have the leash on or anything. He's always there looking in my pocket, you know, checking me out and checking to see if the treat is there or something. But he also just loves me. He'll take his stick and he'll throw it up in the air and he'll look at me, see that? See what I can do, yeah? And he'll throw it around and he'll walk me, bump me with the stick, not to hurt me, although it hurts. And I have to remind him not to do that. You see, I have read the book of the Bible in my dog, and I'm practicing it. I'm not reading it totally yet, because I lose my patience now and then. But whenever I keep my patience, whenever I really am unconditionally loving of him, even when he does something stupid, I reach down and put my hand under his chest and huggle him and snuggle him, and he just stands there and says, don't you ever stop. You see, this is unconditional love. When he does something bad. Now, unconditional love is not something that you can learn, but it's something that you can learn to experience. And you learn to experience it through doing some very simple things. One of my ladies is, she had a son. She had a son. He was so bad. He was so old bad that he wouldn't behave. He'd throw his clothes on the floor. He wouldn't do his schoolwork. He did bad grades in school. The teacher says they're going to kick him out if he keeps on going downhill like he's doing. And everything rotten, rotten, rotten. And the teacher called and said, you take care of that kid now or else, you know, because he started doing bad things on the school grounds too. And so the mother was at home and it was raining outside and she was waiting for the kid to come in the door. And so it was just about the moment the door was going to open, the telephone rang. And she answered the phone, and on the other end, the person said, are you Mrs. Jones? She says, yes. She says, you have just won $30 million on the sweepstake. You have just won $30 million on the sweepstake. Oh, thank you. And she hung up. Now, she didn't have it in her hand, but she won it. Pow! Pow! Her consciousness changed totally. Her attitude changed totally. Her son came in the door, threw his wet clothes on the floor, and tramped mud across the floor. And she says, Simon, come here! And she wasn't angry. She was just beside herself. And she, come here! And she put her arms around him. She says, I love you, 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 I love you. And Simon said, Mom, what's the matter? You know? And just, I love you, I love you, I love you. I'm Simon, you're so wonderful, you're so wonderful, you're such a good boy. Moments before, she would have liked to shot him. You know, struggled up at least, you know. But I love you. She forgot all about anything that had gone before that instant. She was born new that instant with a new attitude of mind that she'd never had before. An attitude that had no attitude against her son. No anger, no hatred, no frustration. All the frustration was gone. And she said, Simon, go upstairs, put some dry clothes on. We're going to the store. We're going to buy that computer, I promised you. That I didn't promise you, but I'm going to buy that computer. And you know you want to get that new pair of skis. We're going to get that skis. We're going to get the ski outfit for you, too. Mom! Shut up, Simon. He says to himself, get yourself ready. So he ran upstairs, changed, came down. Mom? You mean that? Get in the car. Let's go. And they went to the store. They bought all these toys for him. And then they came home. And she served dinner to the family. And she treated her husband with unconditional love for the first time ever, perhaps. She said, sweetheart, you make my day so good. Whenever you come home from work, I just feel like taking you in my arms and never letting go. You are so wonderful. And he says, oh, golly, I like this, I like this. I don't know if I can handle this, but I like this, you know? And so, as the days went by, the boy completely changed. There was nothing for him to be against any longer. He was no longer opposed to life. He put his clothes away because he wanted to. She didn't tell him that again, ever. He hung up his clothing when he came in the house. He was not stupid, and he did well in school. And everything worked out beautiful for him because the mother accidentally expressed unconditional love. Now, just imagine if we would express unconditional love on purpose, you know? If we'd express it on purpose, wow! What would happen in this world? Hey, Pope, how you feeling? You look good, you know? I'd like to see you live another 80 years. As Pope. And the Cardinal said, no, 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 we want our chance. You'll have your chance. You know, in the last 30 years, from 1950, well, a little more than 30 years, but since 1950, the average life of everyone in the United States has increased 30 years. The lifespan has increased 30 years. Now, just imagine what it's going to do in the next 10, 20 years or 30 years. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's his fish dance.
Huh?
That's his fish dance.
Yeah, but no, that's right. That's right. But then that's right. And we have this. If we can learn unconditional love, not having our big nose in anybody else's business and or in our business either, but just have it in God's business, just in our divine self, we would be the happiest people on earth. As our friend, what was his name, Emerson, remember Emerson? Ralph Waldo Emerson, he said, get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. Get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. And when we get our bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits, what's going to happen? Everything that is working in harmony, in unconditional love, will come forth in our life. In unconditional love. It is fabulous. You see, we put the cause in motion for this unconditional love. We put the cause in motion to live eternally. Now, do you know any reason why your body shouldn't live forever? You are the cause that doesn't live forever, because you, in your thought, think you're going to die at 90 or 100, or you don't want to live forever in this body, you know. That's a silly thing to say. You don't want to say you don't want to live forever in this body. You want to live forever in your ideal spirit, mind, and body, yeah? I want to live forever in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. We should stop calling our body limited or evil or in any way that it is going to decay. We want to talk about our body in a way that's going to pay for us. It's going to say, hey, let's go. This is the way. You understand? You going to change the tape and turn it over or what? I've only been speaking for 53 minutes. Good. So, what do you want? You see, our body, and again, if you've done any research, if you read the Discovery magazine, or if you read Popular Science magazine, or Popular Mechanics, or whatever, you say, well, what's them? They're pretty good. National Geographic, Smithsonian Institute, a few of the other quality type magazines. They tell you that the only reason the human body does not live forever is that the human mind puts into the lymph gland through thoughts about itself, about its own limitation. We put into our thinking system that we are limited. You say we have genes and chromosomes and so forth that come from our family, and these limit us. We have these things. Hey, they don't limit us at all. I'm going to ask you this silly question. Who put them there in the first place? Somebody. They weren't there. Can God create any junk? Everything that the Bible, first chapter of Genesis says, and God created everything and called it good and very good. Now, when did we start calling things not good? In the second chapter of Genesis. That's right. In the second chapter of Genesis, that's where the prophets and the Old Testament Bible people were taking care of. Well, let me tell you the story. There was a boy, a very lovely, loving boy. That was somebody else. But anyhow, there was this boy, and he was his father's son. And he was his father's pride and joy. And his father doted on this kid and gave him everything. And the kid wouldn't behave. And so the father finally had to scare the hell out of the kid, you know. He couldn't kill him, he couldn't do anything bad to him, but he wanted to scare the living daylights out of him. And so he said, son, God spoke to me and told me I must offer you as a burnt offering on the altar to him. And the boy says, Dad, do you have to, Dad? No, no, Dad, no. You know, he really didn't want to do that, you know, the son. And the father says, but I must. Come, we'll go to the altar. So Abraham took his son out to the altar. And as he went out to the altar, he took his son and tied him up and put him on the altar. And he put a bunch of branches around him, ready to light it. And then he took out his knife, and he was ready to cut the boy's throat so that he wouldn't be burning to death in the fire. And then the boy says, Dad, I'll be good, I'll be good. Talk to God, let me go. And so Abraham said, well, bless my soul. Look there, caught in the brush. He had his associates on the farm leave a ram there, caught in the briar bush, couldn't get out. And so he went over there, and he says, God wants me to offer this ram as a burnt offering, not you, my son. How fortunate you are. And so he got this ram from the bush, and nobody says that he didn't, and he put it on the altar, and the boy was spared. Now, you think that's a joke? Do you think fathers have trouble with their kids sometimes, yeah? Mothers have trouble with their kids sometimes, and they're frustrated to the nth degree, and they want to scare the daylights out of them, and yet they don't want to kill them, you know? They'd like to kill them too sometimes, you know, but you're not allowed to do that. But so what happens? This is what we do to ourselves. We try to scare ourselves. We try to tell ourselves that we are not holy, that we are not divine, that we are not God. We try to tell ourselves that we are not responsible, and we are responsible for every thought we think, every word we speak, every action we take. We're responsible for everything that goes on in our life. Nothing happens by chance. You see, we sometimes say it's a karmic experience from a previous lifetime. Well, in my estimation, there is only one lifetime that we live at a time, and we're busy enough living it. If we would spend all of our effort living this life as beautifully as we can, the other lifetimes will take care of themselves. Now, if we are aware of our other lifetimes, that's all well and good. But if we want to believe that there are other lifetimes, if we want to believe that there is karma, and there is karma, what's it called by another name? The law of cause and effect. For every cause you put in motion, you get an effect. That's another word for karma. All of these things. Now, Reverend Pamela was telling us about the chakras, the body energies, the body strength, and the body magnetism, and all that good stuff. Well, that doesn't exist except here, in your mind. Every one of these body energies that you have only exist when you recognize them and give them power. When you don't recognize them and don't give them power, they don't exist. Now, that's not to say that they cannot be beneficial and wonderful to us if we will put them to motion in a good way, but it's not by chance, because there's nothing in the world that happens by chance. There has always been a cause that was put in motion to bring about the effects that we experience in our life. And if those effects are happy effects, we have put the cause in motion. If those effects are negative effects, then we have put the cause in motion. Now, Bodhi, remember our little 88-year-old girl? She is just a dynamo. She came up and she was telling me, oh, Herb, it's just like I experienced it, you know, when I was in that fire. And I said, Dodie, when you can let go of that fire, then that fire will no longer have a hold on you. but you will always fear fire because you had that experience. Now, let it go. Don't tell anybody about the fire experience again. It was such a, oh boy, you know. I said, yeah, that's right. It was such a, oh boy, experience. You got to tell people. You can get mileage out of it, you know. Let me tell you about my ulcer. Let me tell you about my what's over here, you know, appendix or something, whatever you're cutting off, you know. Let me tell you about it. And you got to get mileage out of it. But the mileage you get is not always this way. It's this way and this way and that way. It's a great disparity. And it's a mileage that can be very destructive to you. Pam was telling me about her son and what a wonderful boy he is. And I've met him and he is a fantastic boy. He is brilliant. He is a genius. He is an excellent father. He is an excellent husband. He is an excellent man. He is just quality from the word go. Is that right?
That's normal. He takes after his mother.
Don't play games with my words. I'm sorry. You may think this is cute, but don't do that. I am shitting worth it. Bah! When I say something, I'm not kidding you. I'm saying her son is a fabulous, beautiful, magnificent boy. He is an excellent father. He is an excellent husband. He is an excellent man. He is a genius in everything he does. Now, get your bloated nothingness out of the way and say the right answer. Is that correct?
Very much so.
Very much so. You are teaching them to joke with the truth, and you don't do that. Don't do that.
Okay.
Because I'm so serious. And, you know, even the word shitting is terrible. But I'm so serious. Don't do that. Don't make jokes. They're going to come back and bite you. Any kind of joke you make is going to come back and bite you. Anytime you speak despairingly of another person, it's going to come right back and it's going to dig a hole right inside of you. It's going to hurt you bad. Don't do that. Now, remember $30 million, Marina? Remember the woman with $30 million? What happened to her terrible son? He never was. He never was. He never existed terrible. She could never tell anybody that he had been terrible before, and now he is there. Before I couldn't see, but now I can see. Remember Jesus, that stupid man? He said to people, go and sin no more. Okay. He said to the blind man, go wash your eyes in the river Siloam, and then come back. You could see. Now go and tell no one. And they went out and they told everyone, before I was blind and now I can see. See, see. And they went blind again. They went blind again. We must treasure this spiritual reality that we are. We must treasure this truth about ourselves. Jesus knew what he was talking about. He was one of the greatest psychologists, one of the greatest philosophers, one of the greatest minds of the world. And we play games with him. Jesus was homosexual. Jesus chased after women. Jesus was a wine bibber. You know, we say all these stupid things, you know? Why are we saying them? Because those are our own weaknesses. They're our own weaknesses. And we don't want to say them. And we don't want to say them. Because if we say them, what we are doing is we are empowering that to be our condition. We want to be totally free of these things. Now, you say, this is supposed to be a workshop and we're not doing very much work. I can tell you one thing. If you have listened to me, if you have listened to the diversity of the comments that I have made, and they are all designed to bring us to one point, and if you have listened, you have gotten one of the greatest treasures that your life could offer. And that treasure is that within you is all truth. Within you is all knowledge. Within you is the all of the all. And within you is the only place you'll find it. Within me is the only place I'll find it. People say, well, Herb, you can do a lot of these things because, you know, you've been at this a long time. Hey, if it has taken me a long time to get to the point where I am that I can do these things, then I'm not very good. I'm pretty slow, you know. By the way, I know I didn't introduce myself to you. I am 25 years old. I have this masquerade that I like to put on. It, you know, sort of gives me that wisdom look, you know, Solomon type look. But no, be who you are. You are wonderful beings. You would not be in this room tonight if you were not ready to make a big change in your life. I would like each one of you to play a little game with us for a few minutes right now. And I'm going to ask Richard to go in the kitchen and get the trash bag. Richard. And he's going to get the trash bag and he's going to come around in front of each one of you. So go out and get the trash bag. And he's going to come around and in front of each one of you, and you're going to take all of your trash, all of your old ideas, the ideas of being unloving, the ideas of being old or sick, the ideas of having... He wants to play it for real. The ideas of doing all these things. And that's good. That's good. I like people who like to do it. That's fine. But now, just wait a moment. So you're going to take all of the garbage of your thinking. Remember the $30 million mama? She forgot that her son was terrible. She forgot that. And she not only forgot it then, she forgot it for the days to follow. And her son stopped being terrible because she didn't see him that way any longer. Her husband may have been so-so, but after she had her conversion, you might say, her rebirth, her recognition of her unconditional love, her husband wasn't the same man anymore, was he? How wonderful, right? Okay, now, everyone close your eyes, please, and keep them closed. Free your hands so that you can take your hands and reach inside yourself and just shovel out all of the garbage, all of the nonsense, all of the things that you don't want in you. Now, Richard, please go around and start here on the left, if you like, and and just let them each throw it into them. Okay, now, you just mention to them that you're there so they know you're there. Now, close your eyes. Close your eyes. This is something you're doing mentally, and it's powerful. Okay, go ahead, right to the next one. Now, take everything in your consciousness, everything in your heart that is dumb and limiting and that has ever been holding you back from being the master, the genius, the spiritual reality that you are. Just get everyone, right? Now, you have one lady playing hide and seek in the back room there. You have to get her, too. Yeah, he won't forget you. Okay, now take all the stuff out of your heart. Get it all loosened up. Shake your shoulders a little bit so it's easy to take it right out and flow it right out into that great big trash can. Wow, she is really going there. Super. Okay, more. Yeah, you can take it. Richard, go out the door. The dumpster is out there. And put it in the dumpster and then come back in.
Actually, the dumpster's out there.
Well, wherever you keep your dumpster, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Open the door and go out there and dump it and come back in. And keep your eyes closed. Because you're still at work. We're still doing this project. This project is taking all of the thoughts that tell you something's impossible. Taking all the thoughts that say you are sick or someone near and dear to you is sick, saying someone near and dear to you is having problems, and that's all gone now. It's all gone now because you're just flushing this up and out and out and out. He's taking long enough to empty that wastebasket. Richard, Richard! Richard! See, this is one of the joys of realism, you know. He had to unlock the door and lock the door again, you know. But, okay, you just go anywhere you want. Just take everybody. And wait long enough and get them in there. Get it in there. Come on. Get it in there. Yes, that's true. Beautiful. Dump it right in there. Dump it right in there. Great, 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 great. All the problems about the family, the friends, the relatives, yourself especially, are all in there and gone forever and ever and ever. And I have a contract. I have a contract with the trash company. They're gonna come by instantly after we're done dumping in there, and it's gonna be taken away, and you can't run out there and pick it up.
You can't keep it around.
Yeah, it won't be around. Just keep your eyes closed now. Keep your eyes closed. Realize that this is very serious and very important. You take your bad eyesight in there, and you take your bad hearing in there, and you take your bad heart in there, and you take your bad lungs in there, and you take your bad everything. And what you got left is the good stuff. It's the good stuff. And it is all beautiful, all wonderful, fantastic. We are the creator of our world. We create our world by every thought we think and every action we take. We create our world by thinking about our illness, and we have it. We create a world by thinking about our limitations, that we cannot do things. I'm working with the monks on the ranch, and I'm saying to them, okay, what's the population of Moscow? Quick, tell me, quick, quick, quick. And they want to think. I said, don't think, just say it. And so then this one woman said what the population of Moscow was. I said, okay, go get the almanac. So she got the almanac, and she says, the almanac's not right. And I said, what year is the almanac? 2003. I said, of course it's not right. It's now 2005. I said, 2004 would be closer. But you see, believe in yourself. Practice, 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 saying that you know these things, saying that you believe these things, saying that these things are real for yourself. And when you do that, you build the confidence within yourself to believe in yourself. Do you think that Mozart could have written the music he wrote if he didn't believe in himself? He didn't want to believe in himself. He believed in himself. He didn't want to be a great musician, a great composer. He was. Beethoven was the same way. Now, why did some of these people go blind or go deaf in the middle of their career? Why did that happen to them? Because they were not limited by hearing or seeing to write and compose their music. They had it in their head. They knew Mozart wrote every note that he composed, and he never owned an eraser. There has never been one erasure mark. And thank you to the sweetheart here too. And then we'll hold it for you too, Richard. Okay, Richard. Come on, Richard. There you go. Oh, wow, great. Super, thank you. Okay. Oh, she's still going here. Great. Okay, you take it out now. One more?
Yeah.
Where's, oh, she's still there? Well, and here, he wants to give you a few more things. Yeah, we can't let her be missed. First she did her physical evacuation, now she's doing her mental and spiritual evacuation.
What about the instructor?
Oh, you want me to do it again? I'm glad to. I'm happy to, yes. You see, this is nice. Rarely do they say, what about the instructor? Rarely. They pass the instructor by, just like he's just a piece of wood up there, you know, just a tape recorder. Here we go.
We do everybody in the
suit. We do everybody in the suit. Okay. Get it all out. Wonderful. Wonderful. He's patient. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. This, that's right, dump it, and as soon as you come back in, the dumpster people are coming by to pick it up. Now, it's gone. I know everything that any one of you dropped in there. And you say, well, thanks a lot, you know. No, I knew what it was. You don't have it anymore. So there's no thanks a lot about it. It's not yours. Is it yours? You threw it away, didn't you? It's not yours, right? Right? You threw it away. It's not yours. Be like the lady with the $30 million. Completely forget about all that nonsense that you have now thrown away. Put a fresh basket in there too. But you see, now you're ready. Now you're ready. You're ready just like $30 million. When you can do that, you're on the first step mentally for your unconditional love. Because now you can start loving yourself. What happens when you are in good condition? When your body is healthy, what happens when your body is healthy? You don't know it's there. Tell me about this hair on the back of your neck. You know? You don't even know it's there. Tell me about the something on the bottom of your foot. You don't even know it's there. You don't have any idea what's on any parts of your body, hardly. It's just a few parts that you have chosen to give attention to. Well, stop giving attention to it. Start loving it. Okay. Now, how long did you want us to go, or could we?
I think we can take a break anytime you want.
Oh, you want to take a break? And then what?
We'll come back and talk some more.
Okay. Is this suitable with you guys? You want to take a break and have a little glass of water and maybe a yakadoo tour and come back? Because what I want to share with you next, we'll leave it for a surprise when you come back. You'll enjoy it. Okay, take a pause.